Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on. Welcome back to Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on. It's a real pleasure to wrap up our show for the next half an hour with two colleagues of mine based between Arizona and Cleveland, and that would be Marty Abbott and Mike Fisher, co-founders and partners of AKF, a consulting firm. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, thanks, Zara.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Zara.
It's a real pleasure. We're actually going to focus on, as well, their new book, which is called The Art of Scalability, Scalable Web Architecture, Processes, and Organizations for the Modern Enterprise. And before we go there, let me frame up who my two colleagues are. As I mentioned, they're co-founders of AKF Partners, which is a practice that resolves critical scale and availability issues for clients in the U.S. and abroad, helping clients resolve organizational disconnects and align technology and project strategy needs. Mike and Marty are entrepreneurs, technologists, and business leaders with both Fortune 500 and startup experience. They were formerly COO and CTO at Quigo, an advertising startup that they helped turn around and sell then to AOL. Prior to Quigo, Marty was executive at eBay for 6 years, and most recently there was senior VP and chief technology officer. He also held domestic and international engineering management and executive positions at Gateway and Motorola. Mike, he was the vice president of architecture and engineering at PayPal, and prior an executive manager and engineer with several divisions of General Electric. So listeners will know they've got three engineers to contend with for this half an hour, myself included. Mike and Marty are also inventors with issued and pending patents that range from authentication of electronic documents to the automated optimization of content, products, and advertising based on aesthetic attributes. Both these gentlemen, by the way, are graduates of the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, and they served our country for a number of years on active duty, the National Guard, and the Army Reserve. Marty is a recipient of the highest award given by the director of the U.S. Secret Service to non-Secret Service employees. He also earned a master's in computer engineering, and he studied at the University of Florida and Harvard in other occasions. Mike holds a PhD in information technology and also an MBA from Case Western's Weatherhead School of Management in Ohio and a master's in IT. And both these gentlemen are pursuing none other than the Doctor of Management degree from Case Western, which I had the pleasure to receive back in 2007. So amongst everything, authors, consultants, and also students at the same time, that's quite a lot to juggle, isn't it, fellas?
It is. Absolutely is. It's quite challenging, as you know, having gone through the program. But you know, we enjoy all three aspects of it, and I think that keeps us going.
That's great. Really good. Well, the art of scalability, and I mentioned here that the two of you being engineers, it would seem more likely that people would hear you talk about science and technologies as opposed to the softer, squishier side of art. So, Mike, start us out. How was it you came to come to that title or the focus of your work then?
Sure, great question. So, you know, we try to address in the very beginning of the book, The Art of Scalability, this issue of why we chose the word art to for the title. And when we look up art, the definitions are, you know, things such as a branch of learning or skills acquired by experience, study, or observation. And, you know, art, as opposed to science, gives us the feeling, the connotation of much more flexibility. And when you talk about scaling a business, and by scaling we mean, you know, growing very rapidly in all different aspects, and we could talk about, you know, those different aspects more, it requires flexibility. It requires, you know, something that is not formulaic. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, we wish there were formulas that we could just, you know, write down and scale, but that's not the case. You know, we're dealing with people and organizations as well as technology, and you're dealing with customers, and therefore it really requires a degree of flexibility. And art gives us that, and that's why we included that in the title and chose the title for the book as The Art of Scalability.
Well, and I think, Marty, we want to make sure the point for listeners understand that while Marty and Mike do come from a very strong and broad technology business, in fact, the highest tech stuff involved with the Internet, eBay, PayPal, and then some, that actually your precepts here equally apply to any sort of business, right? I mean, that these really are common threads for all.
Yeah, I think the principles that we outline within the Art of Scalability are applicable to everything from organizations through processes and technology itself. And from an organizational perspective, it can be applied to a finance organization, a marketing organization, or the top management team of the company. In fact, we begin the book talking just about how to apply some of those concepts to organizations. And then at the end of the book, which is really focused more on technology, we revisit organizations and apply some of the proprietary models we've developed to organizations to show how they can help in scaling an organization as well as a technology platform.
Yeah, that's right. When I had asked the two of you to also give me a sense of your having, relatively recently started your consulting firm, that you said out of the chute you were focused on helping young hyper-growth technology companies deal with the technology growing pains of systems failing, capacity planning. Oh, as an engineer, how well I know that. But that share with us though some of the learnings that you suddenly realized that it wasn't just, the systems going live or other systems going dead that was all here in the squirrel, Mike.
Sure, absolutely. That's another good point that when we started the consulting firm a couple of years ago, we were really focused on technology. Mm-hmm. And what we found was that, equally or possibly even more often, we would see that their failures to scale involved the people as well as their processes. From the people aspect, they could have had great people, but they might not be organized properly, or they might not be their leadership might have issues. On the process side, they might have problems with not enough process, or too much process, or not the right process for that particular organization. And that's why it gave us the insight that really we come about with this concept of people, process, and technology, a three-phased approach to scaling organizations. And so that's really how we sort of, move from our initial thoughts that, oh, yes, this is really a technology, into, the aspect that this is much broader than just a technology solution. And that's why it's applicable to many other organizations besides just the high-tech startups. One of the terms that we used is called experiential chasm, which is mm-hmm. the rift in knowledge between mm-hmm. engineering and business executives. And this is one of the aspects of the people that we see as a problem that causes because of their difference in experiences and different educations, it causes communication issues that really break down the relationships and the communication between more the business side and the technology side. And causes issues with being able to grow and scale the company.
That's right. Now, Marty, and I assume what you two are talking about is not just language, meaning the verbal language spoken, but also you've got a whole series of dynamics with now four generations of people in the workforce, right? I mean, the younger kids, as we called more the digital natives versus the digital immigrants, and what kind of challenges that presents, particularly when I think many of your clients, I suspect, know to go and grab those younger kids because they walk in already equipped in many ways, but nonetheless, the blend required.
That is such a great observation and question mm-hmm. Because Fish, my partner Mike Fisher on the phone, and I discuss the millennials all the time and the impact on business and the way in which companies operate. But I think the same principles that exist or that we describe that exist between people of diverse experiences and education, between
yes.
engineers and marketing professional or finance professionals, also exist and have existed for quite some time between generations. I don't think it's new with the millennials. I think if you go back to the Greatest Generation from Tom Brokaw's book and take a look at the gap that existed between them and their parents their parents and their children, and then again, potentially us, you'll see the same things said time and time again. And I do think they're rooted or situated in experiences and education And as a result, it does manifest itself as a language gap, because that's how we communicate. It may be spoken, it may be unspoken, but it definitely causes a bit of an impedance mismatch that ultimately manifests itself as issues within a company.
Yeah,
and
right.
You've probably seen a great deal or a great number of writings on the topic about how just how difficult it is to communicate across generations.
It is, but I think also we've all, particularly us engineers, always took great delight in the Dilbert comic strip, and we could swear that, you know, one of our peers was sending him that material for that particular cartoon that week. So it is as much, though, this talking across different functions.
That's right. And, you know, bringing this back to sort of our opening discussion around art, I think, you know, this is a great example of why it does require the flexibility. You know, we can talk about the right process and the right time, and it really requires the flexibility of, you know, the leaders, the executives, the managers, to understand how they communicate both across different functions as well as across different generations. And, you know, the requirements, one of the things that Marty and I have spoken about and written about recently is on annual reviews. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was... you know, as we came through industry, you know, 10, 20 years ago, it was, you know, just very commonplace to have an annual review. And what we see now is that, you know, the younger generations need, you know, desire and require a much more, sort of constant flow of feedback, much like their communication happens today, you know, with the various social networks of, you know, Twitter and Facebook and such. It's much more of a constant flow. And because of that, you know, you have to be flexible in the processes that you establish in your organization so that they accommodate both, you know, someone who's expecting an annual review as well as, you know, a younger generation who's expecting something much more fluid and on a, you know, and sort of a, you know, near real-time basis.
Well, that's true. The other piece that you, of course, are advising your clients as you help them through these various phases of growth, sometimes you have to cut to the chase, too, so that the idea of waiting for an annual cycle if someone is not well fit in the organization, whether it's by, you know, cultural-related things or not having the right skills or the right, you know, attitude, that sooner you step up to the plate quickly, which I think, Marty, you said earlier, you know, sometimes there's a place for process, but there's other times that the process can tie you down, too.
Yeah, reviews, it's an unfortunate byproduct of the annual review process that people wait to give performance-related feedback, both positive and, you know, negative. Negative meant to actually support and correct behavior. I think, you know, our point regarding more consistent and frequent reviews is it sets somebody in a mindset to receive information and understand that they should act upon it during an annual review process. And that formalized process, while you should be giving performance-related feedback consistently through the course of the year, that formalized process could actually happen much more frequently. And I was just thinking as Fish was chatting, you know, why aren't people starting to text reviews to millennials on a every other week basis?
That's good. Or even the simple great job, team. You know, we get so caught in the foray that we forget to acknowledge and tell how much we appreciate one another. Well, your book spends a lot of time, too, in the course of it, talking about the criticality of teams, both their makeup as well as needs that you might have to turn it around. In fact, another piece you wrote is that these four critical steps to turning around a team, and I love the fact that one of your three steps was to find the enemy, that's a great way to rally everybody to a common cause.
Yes, absolutely. That, you know, we talk in the book about some approaches that have, you know, have worked both in our practice. You know, as you know, we've, you know, as you discussed in our introduction, we're not lifelong consultants. We've actually been practitioners, as well as in our practice of consulting. That, you know, we talk with companies about, you know, we like to leave them with clearly defined steps. Mm-hmm. You know, one of which around, you know, building the team and motivating them is certainly, you know, finding the enemy, you know, someone to focus, you know, to build the team around to go beat and to win the race. And that's certainly very motivational for an awful lot of people. It's a great skill, you know, tactic that we you know, often recommend for companies that are struggling with, you know, motivational or organizational issues.
The other bullet point that caught my attention, Marty, the idea that turning around the team also involves tending the garden. And if you could spend some time talking about that, I think that's really a rich analogy.
Oh, yeah. We use the garden analogy quite often with our clients to describe how it is they should approach their team. And in this analogy, the garden is the team, and you apply the same effort and tasks that you would with a garden, weeding, feeding, and seeding the garden. So from a weeding perspective, we're talking about removing, obviously, the weeds from your garden or the cancers from your organization that ultimately destroy morale, lower productivity, et cetera. They might be the folks who gossip too much, from a behavioral perspective. They might be the folks who simply aren't contributing into the fashion they should. Most often, they're the folks that the organization is turning upon themselves. Mm-hmm. Moving from weeding, feeding and seeding have to deal with treating and training folks appropriately from a feeding aspect, making sure that they get that constant feedback that we discussed earlier, potentially even texting reviews to the millennials. And a seeding perspective, the seeding approach is really talking about keeping a full pipeline of folks that you can ultimately put, the beautiful flowers, if you will, that you can ultimately plant in your garden long term. Because when you remove somebody, ideally, you want to be able to replace them quickly.
Yes.
The way you have to do that is keep a pipeline of folks that you feel comfortable with, that you know are could be appropriate performers, and whom you've vetted over the course of years. They might be people with whom you've had relationships for quite some time.
Well, I think one of the things we have to think about, though, is it also, and particularly growing a firm, is to be cautious of not just picking people like us, because that's what you even alluded to, that some of the gardens look so beautiful because you have diversity in the kind of people that you bring on board, but that also different types of flowers or plants take different times and methods to grow. I recently struck upon this analogy of bamboo, that bamboo you have to water and water and wait and water and water and wait, and then suddenly out of nowhere that bamboo will shoot up, some 60 feet in a period of a few weeks. So I think the art of scalability in your book also cautions, does it not, about maybe making too quick of decisions, but also knowing you got to kind of bridge across that whole portfolio of possibility with people.
Yeah, I think there are two very good points there to be made. One is from an article that Mike recently wrote discussing how it is you need to hire and fire quickly, because you're likely to make poor hiring decisions mm-hmm. in the beginning. If you're really good, maybe you have a 60 or 70% hit rate versus what you would expect about a 50% without an interview. At least research has shown us that. And you want to be able to bring people in, evaluate them quickly, and remove them if necessary before they, as you find out that they're not appropriate, while, of course, you're feeding and seeding the appropriate performers. From an experiential diversity perspective, absolutely. Getting people with diverse thinking styles and diverse educations, diverse experiences, help not only break groupthink, which, reduces your set of strategic opportunities, but also, besides the lack of that groupthink, the fact that you can cover the board or the map, if you will, of experiences and education and thinking styles, it opens up strategic possibilities that might not be there if you get the appropriate level of cognitive conflict in the team.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. In fact, we'd often say that, conflict is a condition of life, but confrontation is the area that the skilled management team wants to bring to the fore, right? So you can continue to move forward.
That's right.
Mike, tell us about, maybe just briefly allude in our wrap-up minutes here, the whole process of the two of you deciding to write this book. And by the way, I think it has the makings of a fabulous textbook in the probably bachelor's, master's, and doctoral setting, not just a book for those of us in business. But how was the journey of writing that book?
Sure, absolutely. And thank you for that. We agree that, we think this is both a practitioner book as well as a scholar book that we hope professors take a look at the book and try to integrate this into their classroom curriculums at all levels, as you said. The motivation for writing the book was, as we discussed when we started the company, we sort of came upon this realization about the three aspects of growing: the people, process, and technology. And because of that, we're obviously not able to, to get this message out to everyone. We deal with, a couple hundred clients a year, and we felt that this was information that really we wanted to share with everybody. We wanted to be able to put it in a format that people could pick up, they could ingest at their leisure, they could they could ponder it. They didn't have to necessarily have us in initially. They could review this information, and so that was the motivation. Was we wanted to share this information. We thought it was that valuable and that important for all organizations, and so that was really the motivation. Yeah, and then Marty and I have known each other for almost 25 years, mm-hmm. and so working together on the book was a fun and delightful project.
And you two are still staying friends, and you're going through a doctorate program together, right, Marty?
Well, we're going through a doctorate program together.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll catch up with you, 2 years from now when it comes graduation? Well, it's been a real pleasure for me to host Marty Abbott and Mike Fisher and their wonderful book, The Art of Scalability, Scalable Web Architecture, Processes, and Organizations for the Modern Enterprise. Gentlemen, if there's any aha that I take away from your closing remark, and thank you, Mike, for adding, is that many people that write books, their motivation truly is to give it away. And you know, then you trust full well that you're going to sweep disciples in your path and take the wisdom and learnings that you've gotten both from your scholarly work and extraordinary business experience to offer to clients and even the casual reader that wants to get smart on the new challenges out there in business. Well, thank you very much for joining us here today, and we'll look forward to keeping track of your progress.
Thank you for having us, sir.
You betcha.
Thanks.
Have a great weekend. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.